Let's get back to our conversation with Philip Furia about composer Harry Warren and his role in the evolution of the Hollywood musical in the 30s. Furia is the author of several books on American popular song. He's writing a book about Hollywood musicals. You know, I recently read an article from the September 1929 edition of the movie magazine Photoplay, and it was about the migration of songwriters from New York to Hollywood. The article was titled Westward, the Course of Tin Pan Alley. Now, Harry Warren was part of that migration. He actually wanted to write for Broadway, but he ended up in Hollywood. What affected the success of his musicals and of the other movie musicals of the 30s have on Broadway and Tin Pan Alley, and the way songs became hits?
Well, when that migration occurred in the 1930s, it pretty much wiped out what had been Tin Pan Alley, which was basically a group of song publishers. They mainly traded in sheet music. And in some ways, it was a real loss because these were people who really knew the kind of songs the public wanted. They got songwriters to target their songs to particular topics or certain styles. They really knew the business. And out in Hollywood, they were movie producers. And when they took over the songwriting industry, they weren't always the best people to tell the songwriters what was needed. So it completely destroyed what had been a very vital songwriting industry housed in New York and moved it out to Hollywood.
Now, the Hollywood studios ended up owning an enormous number of songs. And, of course, they wanted those songs to sell. They wanted the records to sell and the sheet music to sell. How did Hollywood market its songs?
Well, they marketed the songs to sell the movies and the movies to sell the songs. It was a wonderful two-way street for them because people would go to a movie to hear certain popular songs, and then they would come out of the movie and buy recordings or sheet music of those songs. And Hollywood controlled the songs, controlled their production, owned the songs, and sometimes would buy a musical from that had been on Broadway. And if they didn't own the songs, they would throw all the songs out, if they were by somebody like Rodgers and Hart, and they would hire their own songwriters to write new songs. And, you know, they completely destroyed whatever integrity the show had. They almost did it with Showboat. They were going to hire Irving Berlin to write a whole new raft of songs for Showboat and throw out Old Man River. I mean, can you imagine that? Showboat without Old Man River? But the songs had become so popular that not even Hollywood studio executives could sink to that level of substituting new songs for it.
You know, it's so funny. Harry Warren, just about all his life, I think, wanted to write for Broadway. And instead, he goes to Hollywood and ends up writing backstage musicals about Broadway shows.
Yeah, he loved New York. He hated living out in Hollywood. Hollywood, remember, at that time, was a pretty barren place. It wasn't, you know, anything like it is now. And he missed New York, the rhythm, the energy, the restaurants in New York. And I think a lot of what came out in the music is that kind of nostalgia he had for this wonderful, vital city. And Warner Brothers really saw itself as the studio that was very closely aligned with New York, with city life, with working class people. And so many of its musicals, as well as its gangster movies, were set in New York. So yeah, it was kind of a West Coast imitation of the world he'd left behind.
FDR was inaugurated in 1933. That was the same year that 42nd Street was produced. Is there any connection between his campaign and the spirit of the movie?
Oh, yeah. The Warner Brothers saw itself as big Roosevelt supporters. And they actually released 42nd Street timed to coincide with his inauguration. I think they had it open in Washington, D.C. the day Roosevelt was inaugurated. And they had always seen themselves as the studio that portrayed working class people, that portrayed city life, and they really built that into the musical in a way it had never been part of the Hollywood musical before. So that they tried in most of the musicals that Harry Warren and Al Dubin wrote to always have some kind of social significance song in it, and portrayed not elegant people like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, you know, waltzing on the top of a penthouse. But they really portrayed working class people and had them singing, often in great big communal numbers. So you had a sense of people banding together, whether they were putting on a show or, you know, eking out some kind of livelihood in the Depression. But Warner Brothers really saw itself as very much aligned with what Roosevelt was trying to do in the middle of the Depression.
Well, this reminds me of a song that Warren and Dubin wrote for the musical Gold Diggers of 1933, a song called Remember My Forgotten Man. The song is similar to Brother, Can You Spare a Dime in its message, but this time it's sung from the point of view of a woman whose man marched off into World War I, survived only to end up on the Depression breadlines. And musically, it's part torch song and part march. Would you say a few words about the song and about the production number behind it?
Yeah, you know, so many of the songs in the 20s and 30s had to be love songs. And it is a love song. It was sung by Joan Blondell, and it's actually a racially mixed cast that performs it. There are black women who are lamenting their forgotten men along with white women. So in that sense, it was a fairly experimental kind of number. But it's a song that really talks about the horrors of the Depression. And it begins with women singing almost a kind of blues lament. And again, it's choreographed by Busby Berkeley. And as the women are singing, the men move from soup lines and selling apples back into their World War I costumes, and they begin marching. The song turns into a march tempo. And there's this marvelous kind of Art Deco spectacle as they go climbing up, marching up the stairs. And Berkeley has it choreographed so overwhelmingly, but the whole character of the song changes, and it really ends up kind of triumphantly with the men who begin as bums turning out to recapture, in a way, the power that they once had when they were soldiers.
Well, why don't we hear the song? And this is the original recording from the movie.
Remember my forgotten man. What fell from his brow, but look at him right now. And once he used to love.
Remember My Forgotten Man, music by Harry Warren, lyrics by Al Dubin, sung by Etta Moten. We'll continue our conversation with Philip Furia tomorrow and find out how Warren's music developed in the 40s and 50s.
This is Fresh Air.